Good evening and welcome to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Al Voney, your host. Nice to have you with us. Perhaps many people, I'm sure, are familiar with the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency. For lack of a better way of explaining it, it is this country's version within our government of the people, the spies that have always worked behind the scenes uncovering enemy movements and information that would be vitally important to the security of this country. But a new book came across my desk last week, and we'll be talking with the author. That's Nathalia Holt. Her new book is Wise Gals, The Spies Who Built the CIA and Changed the Future of Espionage. And what Nathalia has done in her new book is to bring to light, and I didn't even realize this, and as I say so often, I tend to be a history buff, but a small group of female spies played an intricate role within the CIA, especially post-World War II. So for the next half hour, we'll be speaking with Nathalia Holt about her new book, Wise Gals. Nathalia, nice to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
How did you come across, I mean... Most people would think, well, you know, war is war, and yeah, you know, we've always had our CIA and our agents keeping an eye on us. But how did you uncover the fact that a group of women played a vital role in the CIA so far back? I mean, today it probably is more commonplace, but I'm thinking, you know, World War II, post World War II, I wouldn't even have thought women were being recruited.
Well, I had no idea myself until 2017 when I was interviewing a woman in Boston who had worked in Europe at the end of World War II. And she had this really odd story to share with me, and it involved a Nazi war criminal and an American woman whom she was certain was a spy. And so I started trying to track down this woman, and what I uncovered was an entire network of female intelligence officers that served during World War II and then began building the CIA during the Cold War. And their stories were just fascinating. It took me many, many years to track them down and to track their families and to declassify CIA governments in order to be able to tell their stories.
I got to think, for lack of a better way of putting it, that especially back then, it was not commonplace to utilize women either in combat roles or in this case, espionage roles. But obviously somebody within the CIA or the mindset of the CIA must have thought, you know what, they may actually perform better, able to infiltrate whatever it is that we're trying to find out better than male counterparts. Is that sort of how the thinking might have been?
That's exactly right. It's really thanks to a man named William Donovan, and he's considered the father of American intelligence. He was tasked in 1942 by President Roosevelt to begin the spy agency for World War II, and he had just a unique vision for how to do so. He felt that people from different backgrounds with different life experiences would bring those strengths to their operations. And it's exactly what we see. He hired so many women during World War II, and it's because of him then that we have these women who, during the 1950s, are then spread across the globe performing all of these different operations.
Nathalia, would these women have been already part of the military, or were they recruited basically as raw recruits from the general public?
So it's a mix. You know, the CIA is a civilian agency, but these are all women that served during World War II. So they started out, many of them, with this military background, as so many other CIA officers did in the beginning. And they were able to kind of bring that mix of intelligence and military experience to their work.
You know this better than most. World War II, we basically had two fronts. One, you know, we were fighting Germany on the European continent, and then Japan on the Pacific continent. Did these was the CIA and more specifically these women, this group of women, were they active on both fronts?
This particular group that I write about were concentrated in Europe, but there were many other women that were active on both fronts. In fact, it was really difficult to pick the women that I wanted to profile in this book because there were just so many at that time. There's so many great stories. But certainly the women that I chose all happened to be in Europe.
And the goal, I'm assuming, was to infiltrate or get as much information of the German high command, what their next move was, troop movements, stuff of that nature. Is that what they were involved in?
That's part of it. There are a number of different roles these women played. A great example is Jane Burrell. So she was hired as a counterintelligence agent in a very elite unit that was called X2. And so she was sent to Normandy, where she began working with her other counterintelligence officers, and they tracked down German spies and then turned them to work for the Allies. And so, you know, Jane was able to do this in a way that was very different than many of the men she worked with, because she was seen as less intimidating by some of the officers that they were interrogating. And so she was able to get these men to feel as if she was friends with them. And she would then convince them to work for the Allies. She then had them sending misinformation back to the Germans. And so what we see is that during large military operations in Europe, German U-boats and troops are actually speeding away from Allied landing sites. And it's thanks to these successful operations they ran and being able to control German agents.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because I think most people, especially if you're a history buff and more specifically focused on World War II, especially the German war machine, many people to this very day believe that the Hitler regime was so fanatical. In terms of the war itself, but more importantly, of convincing the citizens of Germany, the military, that they were successful. This was going to be the greatest moment for Germans. So it's interesting that these women's role, as you talked about, was to convince German spies, male German spies, right, to see their that what was being told to them, the propaganda that they were being sold, was not truthful, and working for the Allies might bring the war to a quicker conclusion. Is that sort of the mindset?
That's exactly right. And Jane was certainly working with a group of men that were not, these were not good people. These were war criminals. These were murderers. And yet she was able to get them to work for the Allies despite this. And even after the war, she kept fighting. And what we see during that period is there is a real fear that the Nazis are hiding treasure and riches across the countryside as a means to return to power. And so Jane embarks on this massive treasure hunt across Europe. That's really exciting. It's such a thrilling scene in the book.
So amazing is, as you just talked about, I don't think people realize that the Germans were indeed putting away vast fortunes of other countries, right?
That's right. And so what Jane is able to do is during her interrogations with these German spies, she is able to then find out information about where these treasures are hidden. And so during one interrogation with a man who's codenamed Flush, he leads her to this castle that's in the Italian Alps, and they begin searching the grounds, and they find just under a stand of trees sacks of gold. They bring this treasure back to the intelligence station, and Jane begins counting it, and she finds 103 pounds of gold coins worth some $6 million in today's currency. It's an incredible find.
Wow.
And really just the start for Jane, I mean, of all the amazing things that she's able to accomplish in intelligence.
I want to talk more about what the personality of these women, I mean, their makeup, whatnot. But I want to just take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona. This is this week's edition of The Public Eye. My guest this week is author Nathalia Holt. Her new book, Wise Gals, The Spies Who Built the CIA and Changed the Future of Espionage, chronicles not necessarily the men within the ranks of the CIA, but a small group of women who played a crucial role. And Nathalia, as I said, I'm thinking, okay, so these must be women who didn't care about getting married, settling down, having children, no family ties. The thrill was chasing after these German spies, convincing them to see things differently and recruit them to work for the Allies. You know, that might be a little extreme, but you know, what kind of woman during World War II would be part of the CIA?
So what I found so interesting in my research was that all of these women were quite different. They came from very different backgrounds. So you have Adelaide Hawkins, who was born in a small town in West Virginia. She had only a high school education. She was a single mom with three kids, and yet she manages to rise in the ranks of the CIA, eventually becoming director of covert communications. And then on the other hand, you have a woman like Mary Hutchinson, who has a PhD in archaeology, who's fluent in four languages, who's married to another CIA officer. And when she first applies to the agency, she is only offered the job of a secretary. And this is despite her experience, her service during World War II as well. And she is just aghast at this. And she tells the man interviewing her, quote, "That is a waste of my abilities." So you have such a range in these women, in their education, in their background. Some were married, some weren't, some had children, some didn't. And what's impressive is they're able to use these experiences in their operations. So Adelaide Hawkins, who is the single mom of three, is very successful because nobody would ever think that she is a spy. There's just nothing about her that screams that to the enemy, and she's able to use that perception to her advantage.
Yeah, I mean, I would think it'd be, you know, absolutely necessary for survival, but also to be able to infiltrate and win the trust of the enemy. Were these women, did they ever work shoulder to shoulder, or were they basically spread all over the world and very seldom came into contact with one another?
So these women were spread across the globe until one event happens in 1953. And it starts kind of innocently enough. These women are all back in Washington, D.C. at this time. And Alan Dulles is being sworn in as the new director of the CIA. And Dulles himself was not new. His appointment was not unexpected. But what happened next definitely was not expected. And that's because after his swearing-in ceremony, he casually asked the crowd, "Do you have any questions?" And these women, who are nicknamed the Wise Gals by their male colleagues because of their intelligence and sarcastic humor, then just begin peppering him with questions. And they say, "Why are women hired at a lower grade than men? What are you going to do about professional discrimination against women?" And Dulles, to his credit, because, I mean, you can imagine that even for a modern workplace, questioning a new director on the day of his swearing in would be a bold move. But in 1953, this is just completely unheard of. And so it's really to Dulles' credit then that even after this happens, he decides to support these women as they form what becomes known as the Petticoat Panel. And that's when these women get together and begin an exploration of the role of women at the CIA.
In total, Nathalia, how many women are we talking about? Are we talking about just a handful, or were there quite a few of them?
There were quite a few. So what's so interesting about the CIA in 1953, and the reason the Petticoat Panel exists at all at this time, is because 39% of the agency's workforce are women. And this is much higher than other government agencies, which are about 25% women. And what we see is that for these women, they're being hired by the CIA as reports officers, which is seen as kind of a lesser position within the agency, someone who's writing up reports overseas. But even though they're being hired in this position, they're actually working as operations officers. And in the book, I talk about how Liz Sedmeier, for example, is able to recruit, develop, and handle her own spy network in Baghdad, where she is stationed. And she has a great story. She grew up on a reservation in South Dakota. She then goes to officer training at the CIA. She serves in World War II and then is sent to Syria and then Baghdad. And she's able to create her own spy network, which is something that very few of her male colleagues were able to do, because she recruited spies from a hair salon and a dress shop. And using those resources, she's able to gain secret documents for Russian fighter jets and a whole host of other weaponry. So even though the women were being hired at these lower positions, they were actually working in very important operations that they themselves were directing. And so that's why it's, you know, it's not surprising perhaps that women were not being hired at the same level as men in the 1950s especially. But what is surprising is the efforts of these women to try to do something about it and to make the situation more fair and to bring more women into the CIA.
Yeah, the thing I was, as you just alluded to, that I think is extremely important and impressive, because it's still, you talk about the Middle East. There are regions of the Middle East today where women still have not even gained a foothold in terms of equality. So, for a woman, as you just talked about, being able to be based in Baghdad at that period in history and still work among a very male-dominated, a male-oriented society and still prove to be successful is remarkable. I mean, be honest with you, I would have packed my bags and would have been out of there in 5 minutes. So, you know, kudos to these women. I mean, it's amazing because it was not, especially in the Middle East. I mean, I think you'd agree that it just wasn't a friendly environment for women. So that had to make their job even more challenging, right?
It absolutely did. And Elizabeth Sedmeier was incredibly brave. All these women were, but just to give you an example of how brave she was, in 1958, Iraq experiences a revolution, and Westerners in the country are immediately being targeted and killed. The CIA station in Baghdad is evacuated. Every CIA officer leaves immediately, except for Liz. She is the only one to stay behind. And she stays undercover in order to protect their spy network in the region. And she does this to protect them, but also to keep sending information back to Washington, which was very important at this time. And she's truly risking her life to do so. And it's because of her bravery then that her station chief, who is a man named Arthur Callahan, ends up nominating her for the Intelligence Medal of Merit, which is this very prestigious honor at the CIA. And, you know, this is happening, of course, in the late 1950s. And administrators in Washington are just aghast at this. And they say, no, that's impossible. No woman could have done this. We can't give her this award. And it actually takes 6 years of Arthur Callahan fighting for Liz until she's finally recognized for her efforts.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, as you know, as time went on and, you know, we got beyond World War II and, of course, the Cold War set in shortly thereafter, but in doing your research for Wise Gals, did you get the sense that either shortly before their careers had come to an end, or at least during their lifetime, that each of these women got their due diligence, they got their recognition that they so rightfully deserved?
They did. You know, these are women that did not serve in the CIA because of salary or promotion. They did it because they really believed in what they were doing. And they just kept fighting. They kept getting more positions, more responsibility. We see a woman named Eloise Page, who rises from being a secretary during World War II to becoming the most powerful woman at the CIA. She becomes director of scientific and technical operations. She also becomes the first female station chief at the agency, which is a position she receives after her predecessor is assassinated by terrorists in Greece. So it's certainly a position that requires great courage on her part to take. And so you see all of these women then rise in the ranks and bring in more women after them. So, you know, these aren't women, of course, that did it for recognition. But it was a pleasure for me to be able to finally tell their stories and how much they had accomplished during their careers.
We've only got a couple of moments left, but let me ask you, you did have the opportunity to directly interview some of these women, right? I mean, they're still alive and still reminiscing about their experience?
Unfortunately, no. None of these women are alive. Sadly, I could not have written this book if they were. The only way I was able to declassify these documents with the CIA was because they had passed. But I was able to interview women and men that had worked with them, that were CIA officers that served with them in these countries, as well as interview their families and be able to get a lot of personal details about what their lives were like, what sacrifices they made, what they were passionate about. And so all of these materials really come together to give you a full story of what they did, what the accomplishments of this group were.
Well, in addition to being a part of U.S. history, it also establishes a legacy. And as I said at the outset, I don't think a lot of people realize that women of this nature served in such demanding positions during both World War II, wartime, as well as in the Cold War, and to this day, I'm sure it's more acceptable to find women in high ranking positions throughout the CIA. But back then, these were true trailblazers who worked on behalf of their country, because, as you said, they believed in what they were doing. Again, real quickly, what? Was there any one woman that really impressed you more than any of the others?
Oh, I can't play favorites. That's not fair. I love them all. But I will say that there is Jane Brell, who I started talking about in her service during World War II. She has a really special story because after the war, she was stationed out of the CIA's office in Paris. And she was working on an operation with the Monuments Men. So she was flying from Brussels back to Paris in January 1948. Now, this is just 4 months after the CIA was officially established by President Truman. And the plane started having difficulties. It began twisting in air and eventually crashed on the runway. And all 16 people aboard that flight died that night. And Jane Burrell was one of them, and that makes her the first CIA officer to die in service to her country.
Wow.
However, she has still not been awarded a star on the CIA's memorial wall. So I'm very passionate about trying to change this and trying to finally get Jane this recognition. This is a woman who did so much important work during World War II and during the post-war period. And it's important that we honor that sacrifice that she made.
Yeah, I mean, recognition. I mean, it's almost unheard of that she hasn't been awarded this, even if it's posthumously, because of her work, her courage, and her devotion. To keeping the American people and to making this country safer for everybody. A remarkable story. Nathalia Holt's new book is Wise Gals, The Spies Who Built the CIA and Changed the Future of Espionage. And we're talking about a group of women who really laid the foundation for future generations of women who working in various forms of government, but specifically the CIA. Nathalia, obviously, the book is a great read, but if people want to perhaps get more information about you, maybe post some questions to you, can they do that?
They sure can. You can find me on all different kinds of social media, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and also my website, nathaliaholt.com.
Great. And again, the book is Wise Gals, The Spies Who Built the CIA and Changed the Future of Espionage. And boy, did they ever do that. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona at WICN.org. And again, Nathalia, I'm assuming now the book is in wide distribution, so bookstores across the country, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Again, Nathalia's new book is Wise Gals. And, you know, and I always say this, even though you may not be a history buff, this is more than a history book. In fact, I don't even consider it a history book. I consider it a book on highlighting personalities, people who came from, as Nathalia has talked about, very humble beginnings, making a major and a huge difference at a time when most people would not even have given it a second look. And we truly owe a great amount of gratitude to these women who worked alongside their male counterparts in defense of this country. So, you know, kudos to Nathalia on the book. Again, for the public eye, thank you so much for tuning in. This is Al Vona. Join us again next week.